Oh, it already has to be by saying I'm not happy with this because I feel like I've got much more I want to say and not sure how to say it, and the problem with doing this kind of on the fly 1 week at a time is probably requires more thought. We'll see how it works out. You'll criticize me. No, that's the whole point, right? You are free. I am not imposing my will on anybody else. That is what I'm saying. Hey. Life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. I shouldn't say that on a recording. But at looking at back at Malchut and imposing one's will, we have just finished the Civil War.
Danny, sorry, I just realized I had a process question.
Yeah.
I realize when you don't do the class, but you put a link, were we supposed to read that in between the week you were, the last class and this one?
No, that's a link to what we're doing now.
Okay, fine. I just want to make sure I didn't miss it.
There's nothing here that you're...
Okay.
This is the last week's link is to this right over here.
Okay.
There is no homework.
Okay.
Yes, you should. I'm assuming that you've already read this and you know it, and you've read all the classic Mefarshim on the sources. You've thought about this and have something to say here. But right now, the war is over. David's army has destroyed Avshalom's army. Now he's got to kind of try to pull the country back together again. And really, there are four groups. Yeah, there's his army, the people who are loyal to him throughout these past 6 months, who went with him over to Machanaim, over to the other side of the Jordan. They've been loyal. They felt betrayed by his mourning for Avshalom. We talked about that last time. And he dealt with them in the end of last parak. Excuse me, parak Yudchet, which was when Yoav comes to him and say, you have to go out and talk to them. And he does. The other people that he has to deal with, group two, is the people of the Gilad, which is the east side of the Jordan. That's Menashe, the northeast part of the country. That's right now northwest the country, Jordan. Those ones who protected him and sustained him throughout the Civil War. We saw those names in the last parak. We'll get to them later. They're the people of Yehuda who stayed behind, either uninterested in the Civil War, they had to leave their own lives, or were loyal to Absalom. But Absalom had a following, right? He was anointed king in Hebron. People were following him. Then he's got to bring them back as well. And then people of Israel, who were all the other tribes besides Yehuda, who by and large went with Absalom. What Absalom had done was basically taken the country that David had pulled together and cracked it into parts. That's what the Civil War did. That was going to try to pull this together.
Danny, by the way.
Yeah.
I never realized that.
Huh? Janet, I lost you.
English word is Chevron. And the name of a, when you read it in English, ends up being the name of a car country, Chevron.
Yes, Leah, when she was learning to drive and talking about the little arrows that point you in the direction to go, was reading the instruction and the car manual, the driving manual, and she talked about how you have to watch for the chevrons that are point on the signs. I'd say that chevron was quite the same thing. But yes, a chevron is chevron. Okay. So now in the actual text, we're in Perek Yud Tet, Pasuk Yud. After the war, after David is kind of trying to reconcile with his own army, he called Ha'am, Nadun B'chol Shivtei Yisrael Le'mor. And all the people were Nadun, they were judging themselves. They were debating amongst themselves and all the tribes. This is all the tribes besides Yehuda. That's what we're going to call them Yisrael here. And they said, HaMelech Hitzilenu Mikakwai Veinu, the king, David saved us from our enemies, who Matmohanu Mikak Plishtim, and he supported us in the face of the Plishtim, and the Mira just woke up and wished us a happy anniversary, thank you, and gave us a card. Bataba Brahman Arz Mi'al Avshalom, and now he has gone, run away from the land in front of Avshalom. And that's everyone saying, wait, what did we just do? We just kicked out King David, right? The king, David HaMelech Alav HaShalom, who saved us from all our enemies. Avshalom HaSherim Mashachnu Aleinu Meipa Melchama. And Avshalom, the king that we've anointed to replace him, has died in the war. Batal Lama Atem Marchishim. And now, why are you, again, this is not doing, they're talking amongst themselves, whatever social media existed at that point. Why are you all silent? Lashiva HaMelech, to bring the king back. With the death of Avshalom, the people of Yisrael, the northern part of the country, are all arguing, well, we need to bring David back. We need our king back. Because David had united the kingdom beforehand. Right? This is 28 odd years later, but earlier, back in Perek Hay, and David had been king in Hebron, and the rest of the country was under Ish-bosheth. And then when Ish-bosheth dies, all the other tribes come to call all this, you know, Kol Shivte Yisrael here. This is the previous Kol Shivte Yisrael, everyone else. They come to David in Hebron 28 years before. And they told him, Hine atzmacha ubasarcha anachu. We are your flesh and blood. Even though we hate each other, and we've always, Yisrael and Yehuda have hated each other from day one. They know, really, we're all the same people. We're all Jews together. Gamet Mogal Shim Shom, Shil Shom, that even yesterday, day before, Yo Sha'ul Melech Aleinu, when Sha'ul was the king, At Haita Motzi Umayvi, at Yisrael. You were the one who brought us in. You led us in battle back when we were a united country. Vayomer Hashem, Lech Ata Tiret Ami, and Hashem told you, go be the shepherd of my people, Yisrael. Ata Tiret Ami, Yisrael, you will be the rulers. 28 years before, Kol Shiftei Yisrael came and made David king. Now they're saying we need to bring him back. Yeah, this whole civil war was a mistake. So that's group three. No, that's right, that's group four, rather. People of Yisrael. And now we're going to look at group three. What about the people of Yehuda who were loyal to Avshalom and had basically started this war? But after the civil war, Yisrael realized they were wrong and wanted to reunite. We don't actually have him saying, going back to David and saying, here, you need to be our king again. We just have the record of them talking among themselves, saying we need to do this. But it's clear that that must have happened. There must have been some kind of delegation to David in Machanayim that we're going to accept you back. Because now David goes to Yehuda, who we call group three, and says, okay, you need to join us back again as well. This is source three. Can that next pasuk? After the story about Yisrael, now we're going to go to Yehuda. Amelach David shalach el Tzadok ve'el Aviatar ha'Kohanim. David sent messages to Tzadok and Aviatar, who were the Kohanim Gedolim in Yerushalayim. Lemor saying, Dabru el Zeknei Yehuda. You need to talk to the elders of Yehuda. Lemor saying, Lama tiyu acharanim lashiv et hamelach ha'Beitel. Why are you going to be the last ones to bring the king back? You need to declare your loyalty to me as well. And because the word of all of Israel came to the king in his headquarters back in Machanayim. Now the king, now David knows that the people of Israel are loyal to him. Now he's got to bring Yehuda, a little bit of a turnabout, making them loyal to him. Achi atem, you are my brothers. Atzmi uvasari atem, you are my flesh and blood. David talking to Yehuda. Why are you going to be the last ones to allow me back? We got a statement there. As Malcolm says, Devar kol Yisrael ba'al ha'melech, shekivar noda lo, that he already found out, Devar kol Yisrael kulam, that all the rest of Israel had said, pe'achad unanimously, she'ashuv l'melchotov, he should come back. So this is, but notice what David's mistake was. What does he call Yehuda? He calls him atzmiu b'sari atem. Yisrael, the rest of the country, had called David we are your flesh and blood. But David is only seeing Yehuda as his flesh and blood, at least in his public statement. Again, this is a fracture line that he's going to, you know, basically plaster over it, but it's going to break apart in another 40 years. We know that's coming. So he's getting everyone together. We're sending messages trying to reunite the country after the civil war. So now he's going to continue to try to do this by pulling Avshalom's people back into his service. And he's also going to pay Yoav back. Remember, Yoav is the one who told him, You're an idiot. You know, slaps him across the face. Like, pull out of it. You need to get back with your people. You can't keep mourning there. He's going to pay Piotr back for his insubordination. He's going to appoint Avshalom's general to his staff. That's the source. Five. Next puzzle. Amasa. Amasa was Avshalom's general. He was the leader of the rebellious army. Okay, and really he's the last one left because Avshalom's dead. Ahitophel committed suicide. Hushai, the other, was actually working for David all along. The only one left of the conspirators, basically, of the high-level conspirators, is this Amasa. What does he do? Amasa Tamru, and you tell Amasa, hello, Atzmiu Vesariata. Same thing. You're my flesh and blood. Amasa was David's cousin. Koyasi Elokim, Bechuyosif, I swear by God. Common phrase in Tanakh, that God do this or worse. Imlo Sart Sabati Elefanai. I swear you will be my general. Kol Yamim, forever, Tachat Yoav, instead of Yoav. So he's firing his loyal general and hiring the rebellious one. Right, and that's Amasa. Right, remember Amasa. Amasa, some Avshalom tachat Yoav al tzavah.
That doesn't sound too good to me.
That's a good question, right? Again, I think that helps bring the people, but it helps bring Avshalom's people back in. He's basically saying he's not going to punish anybody from the conspirators, right? They're back in the government here. Yoav will not take this well. Okay, we know Yoav. Yoav likes solving problems by stabbing people under the fifth rib. And as a spoiler alert, that's exactly what happens to Amasa next paragraph. That Yoav's going to hug Amasa and then pull out a knife and Amasa will be dead. But right now, David thinks that this is going to solve problems, right? We got to bring everybody together and we're going to bring all of Absalom's army back in. And then, so he's done this. We don't know how long this takes to get all these people back together again, but the text tells us that, okay, he's done this. Everyone is now back loyal to David. Verse 7, Vayetet Levav called Ish Yudak, Ish Achad, and he pulled the hearts of Yehuda unanimously. You, David, come back to us. And the Vayet here, that the Radak, I think it makes sense, is that it was, I will welcome you back. I'm not going to punish anybody. Amasa gets all the rest of Yehuda back to loyal to David. Amasa hitad levav kol Yehuda. Amasa, leader of Avshalom's army, brings Yehuda back to David. Now everyone's loyal to David and everyone hates each other. Not going to work out well, but whatever. It sounds like every Jewish organization ever, right? And we're going to see this. End of the parak. Beyond Ish Yisrael at Ish Yehuda, that the people of Israel are talking to people of Yehuda. Yomer Esher Yadot Liba Melech, that we have 10 times a claim in the king than you do, right? They're 10 times more of us than they are of you. That he's our king, not your king. Gam David Ani Mimcha is more faithful to us. Madua Ha Ki Lotani. Why are you cursing us? So that Israel is arguing that you're saying these bad things about us. Yehuda, you're saying these bad things about us. Lo yaya divrei rishon lashiv v'lo haya divrei rishon li lashiv malki. We were the first ones to bring David back, right? David had to convince you to bring David back. Vaykash divrei ish Yehuda midivrei ish Yisrael, and Yehuda had even harsher words for Yisrael. And this is as they're trying to bring David back. This is the glorious celebration, bringing David back to Yerushalayim. And everyone, then they're all arguing with each other about who's the most loyal to David? Who really wanted David back? Who is really the faithful Israelite? I'm letting you know, next parak is a whole nother civil war coming up all over again. Okay, the nation's gonna hold together barely under Shlomo, but by the time we get to what, parak Yud of Melachim, it falls apart. And these fracture lines have been there really from day one, between Yehuda and really the rest of Yisrael. And even under Shaul was United Kingdom, the army was so many from Israel, so many from Yehuda. Obviously, all of Sefer Shoftim is all about how the tribes never got along with each other.
Andy, I was going to say, in Shoftim, they never got along.
That's right.
It was very short-lived, this, quote, unity, if it ever really existed.
Right. Unity, they had unity under Eli when they fought the Plishtim. Unity under Shmuel. Unity under Shaul, though it was clearly barely holding together. There's a civil war. They have unity under David for most of his reign. That falls apart, comes back together, unity under Shmuel, and then it all falls apart. Unity under Shlomo, then it all falls apart for the rest of Sefer Malachim. So we're going to look at this not so much from a historical, but from a theological literary perspective. Okay? That we should all listen to. Nechama Price talks about this all the time. You know Nechama Price, right? Renee Price, daughter, professor at YU. We're going to look at Yehuda and Yisrael. Yeah, because this is a Sefer Nevi, it's literary and theological, because they have kind of there's meanings to these different nations here, and I think that they symbolize something. So back in Sefer Bereishit, right? Joseph and the amazing technical dream cook. The split already happened, but there the split was more and more along maternal lines. You had B'nai Leah, B'nai Rachel. B'nai Leah, Yehuda's the one who tells him what to do. Shimon Levi are trying to kill Yosef. Reuven kind of trying to help, but really failing. And B'nai Rachel was Yosef as the leader of that group. Yamin clearly is felt to be part of Yosef's group and not the B'nai Leah group. But the time we get to Sefer Shoftim, especially Sefer Shmuel, that Yehuda has lost all of his allies. It's Yehuda on his own, or their own. And Yisrael basically, through most of Sefer Shmuel, is being led by Binyamin. Again, it's that B'nai Rachel, but Binyamin is shows from Binyamin. So the major tribes are Yehuda in the south and Binyamin, and then Yosef throughout Sefer Shoftim. And through Shmuel, Yosef is the most populous tribe. There are two tribes, actually. It's Ephraim and Manasseh. And they really dominate sort of the people, even though the king is from Binyamin. They still have this sense of B'nai Leah hanging together. Binyamin, Ephraim, and Manasseh is the northern kingdom. That's who Sefer Shmuel. When it actually splits in Sefer Malachim, Binyamin joins Yehuda, which is very interesting historically, right? That Yisrael, the northern kingdom, is basically led by Ephraim, by Yosef. Everyone else is really secondary. No other tribe is ever mentioned besides Ephraim and Manasseh. And then the southern kingdom is Yehuda and Binyamin. You know, we're talking about, I want to look at this not so much in terms of history, but in terms of the thematic literary roles between each of these. Because Chazal noticed that there is a difference between Malchut Yehuda and Malchut Yisrael, and how they are portrayed. This is Gemara Yerushalm in Peah. And Phyllis is saying the split ignores geography. Well, that's so the geography I think is important, but they could have split other ways. All of the tribes on the, you know, you have Yehuda in the south, Ephraim in the north, but there are lots of other tribes around there as well. Why does Yehuda only have the one tribe next to him? Why don't they have Dan, which is adjacent to Yehuda, Reuben and Gad? So I'd say there's more than just geography there. This is where they go.
What about Pelegesh Pagima, Danny? That Yosef is the only one in Israel because basically they all ganged up on Benjamin.
They all gave, right. That was early on. And they kind of brought Benjamin back.
That's
an interesting civil war because that was everybody against Benjamin.
Yeah.
It doesn't fit into this model here. You're right. I'm a Rav Abba Bar Kahana. The Rosh of David, Kulam Tzadikim. The generation of David were all righteous. Ayud, they were. Ayudesh Hayud Dohen Dil Torim. But since there were Dil Torim, there were informers. They said Lashon Hara about each other. So they were obviously not Kulam Tzadikim. Let's see what Tzadikim means in this context. But since.
What's Dil Torim?
Literally informers.
Oh.
I said that once, that the Italian word for reporter is a diltor or something like that, same root. It's some Italian word. It's some Latin word.
It sounds like deleterious.
Deleterious. It may well be. I'm saying bad things?
Yeah.
Okay. And I suspect it is. Is deleterious a single word in Latin?
I don't know Latin from a hole in the wall, but.
But, they lost in battle because there were informers. They couldn't get along with each other. But Achav, who our impression is the worst king ever. He's the husband of Isabel. He's the worships of Barazara, right? Obdei Barazara Hayu. They worship Barazara. Since they did not, there were no informers. If they got to get along with each other, they would win in battle. But the way Chazal saw these two kingdoms was Malchut Yehuda was they kept the mitzvah ben Adam l'makom. They had the Beit Midash, they weren't Obdei Avodah Zarah, but Malchut Yisrael represented those who kept the mitzvah ben Adam l'chavero. Mm. They did chesed with each other. And this is from Rav Eisman, The Riddle of the Bowing Moon. It's a wonderful little book about the dreams of Yosef. And he says that that's not a small thing. The idea that they may be obey Avodah Zarah, but they have chesed for each other. That's a big deal. That's from the Pasuk in Devarim, where this is Moshe's final prayers, Zot HaBracha for the Jewish people. Yibishur Melech, that he, Hashem is king in Yishurun, among Israel, B'tasef Rosh Am, where the leaders of the people got together, Yachad Shivtei Israel, together with all the tribes of Israel. Rashi reads that by he, Akash Baruch Hu is Bishud Melech, Hashem is king, Tamid Amulchuta. Hashem is always king over Israel. Why? B'tasef, when they're together, B'tasfam Yachad, Bagudah Achat, B'shalom B'neim. As long as there's peace between B'nei Israel, Hashem is king. Hu Malkam, B'lok Shesh Machlok at B'neim. Not when there's not, when there's no unity. Mm. And this is where the Sifrei on this says it. Yachad Shiftei Israel. Shehem Osim Agudah Achat. When they're together, one band. Lok Shehem Osim Agudot. Not when they're all in individual groups. They're said no longer Yishuv Melech, king. Chenu Omer would say the Pasukin Amos Habonah B'Shamayim Malatav. And this is the important part of that Hashem builds his palace, his high places in the heavens, Bagudotah Eretz Yisadah, and establishes his band on earth. What is that? Rishim ben Yochai Omar, Amar, Mashal Adam. Here's a mashal, a parable. Shevishtei Svinot. He took two boats, he made a catamaran, two pontoons, Ukrashrom on Agagim Vashtatot, and he ties them together. Emid al Gabayim Ubanalem Paltarim, and puts a cabin on top of the two pontoons, right? That's what a catamaran boat is. Kozmash is, short, as long as the boats are tied together, Paltarin Kayamim. Then his houseboat can stay up. Parshur Svino, as soon as the two boats holding it up split apart, and Paltarin Kayamim, then the whole thing falls apart. That's Bonet Malotav. Kak Yisrael Osin Rosiano Shamakam. So too, when Bnei Israel do the will of God, Malotem B'Shamayim, that's what we mean B'Shamayim Malotav, then his palace is Hashem's high place in heaven. When they don't do Hashem's will, still his agudah is on the earth. So that if I was reading those last two lines, when Yisrael's osim ritzon shel makom is when we're doing all the mitzvot. That's the ben adam l'makom. We're nice and religious, then Hashem has a palace in heaven. But when we're together, even what ain osim ritzona makshal makom, but agudato, then Hashem is still melech. Even if we're not doing the mitzvot, still we're all together, then Hashem's still king among us. United we stand, divided we fall, right? No, I like Benjamin Franklin's comment. The pun of, we must all hang together or we shall all hang separately. That's where he puts it here, right? That there are two conditions for Malchut Hashem. Osim Ritzon Shel Makom or Shalom Beinehem. The ideal is to have both of them, but either one is possible. And we have these two nations that sort of embody these two sides of it, that both of them were nations of Israel. Right? When they don't do as they should, their only hope lies in maintaining a community on earth that forms a single entity. That's the Agudat Tawala Arts. That's the way Rabbi Isaac said it. So that Yehuda and Yisrael, and it's worth reading Tanakh that way, representing these complementary parts of what should have been a single nation. Again, looking at thematically. That Yehuda keeps the Beis HaMikdash, but completely doesn't have any Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. Right? And that's what happened. That's why it splits off, is because Rechavam, the king, says, I don't care what the people want. I'm going to impose my taxes. I'm going to do what I will. I'm going to impose my will on them, and they're going to have to listen to me. And if they don't, I'll make them suffer more. That became the problem with Yehuda. When Yisrael worshipped Avodah Zarah throughout there, they built their fake Beit HaMikdash and had their golden calves, but they were united and they trusted each other. And so we have miracles done for Ahav and for Omri. Right? That's the Haftorah for Mitzorah, where they're being invaded by Aram, and then there's a miracle and the entire army is wiped out. And we see that most clearly in Amos. Amos is the Navi of the destruction of Israel. And he describes what the last straw was. The Al Shosha Pishei Israel Ba'aloshiva.
Al Arba.
Right? Right. It's a whole list of different nations. There are three things, and the fourth one, that's it. They lose it. So what led to the Khorban of each kingdom? Omar Hashem Al Shosha Pishei Yehuda Ba'aloshiva. Right? There are three sins of Yehuda. The fourth one is the last one. What was the straw that broke the camel's back for Yehuda? Al masam et torat Hashem, v'chukav lo shomro, that the fact they despised Hashem's law and didn't keep it. Yotam kizvehem, and they took their idols, asher halchu avotam achareihem. The last straw for Yehuda was the Avodah Zarah. That's what they had managed to keep the faith in Hashem throughout that time. But komar Hashem al shosha pishe Yisrael, what led to the destruction of Yisrael? Arba Alo Shivena, the last one that they destroyed, Al Machron Bakesav Tzadik, Bevion Bavur Nalayim. The fact they sold the Tzadik and the poor, again, they lost their Tzedakah side of it as opposed to the religious side of it. That was the end. That's sort of that split between Yehuda and Yisrael. We've lost what should have been one united religious approach. Ends up being two completely different nations, but two different approaches to their service of Hashem. And any connection to the way Jews are nowadays is completely coincidental.
Yeah, I was trying to sort of figure out the connection, but Ellie was focused on learning the Torah, the actual Torah, not the one that goes in the Tanakh, but. For the parsha, there's the after Mara, they talk. It says Sham Sam Lo Chok Mishpat Sham Nisahu, and Torah basically says what's the Chok Mishpat? Was he teaching like Shabbos and all the like halacha? And he says no, he was teaching Lahov Ish Et Rehu Litnaheg Batzata Zekeni and Batzne Alechet Elohim. So it's all about Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, which I thought it seems sort of relevant here. So that's really important, and sort of that came
really
first,
right. I think that's the point here, that this split kingdom, that as being the model for exactly what you're not supposed to do, mm-hmm. that we end up, everyone misses half of what they're supposed to be doing. And that's just bad, right? I mean, we get that. This is the bit. So we want to unite these two sides there. And again, this is kind of a literary way of looking at it. I suspect that the actual politics wasn't quite so clean cut. And again, obviously, the coincidental geography of where people ended up mattered to all of this. So, reading this as a literary work, that each of these kingdoms symbolized something. And again, Yosef is the dominant tribe in the north, and this is what, that Yosef represents the love of Am Yisrael. Back from day one, that's always true. That's Yaakov's bracha to Yosef, ben parat Yosef. Yosef is a fruitful child, ben parat aliayin, a fruitful child that pretty to the eye, as Rashi puts it. And then midei avir Yaakov, that from the hands of the power of Yaakov, misham ro'eh Eben Yisrael. Yosef, from there, could be the shepherd of Eben Yisrael, which Rashi says, a lot of interpret Eben Yisrael being the stone of Israel, being the kind of unity there. We talked about this in the Chumash class. But the Tagmungla says, Evan Yisrael refers to the family of Israel. Mamre Zan, that by his word he supported Abahon Uvenin, the fathers and sons, Zahar Yisrael, the seed of Israel. The Evan, as Rashi says, for there, Evan Yisrael's Lashon Notrikon, it is an acronym, an abbreviation of Avu Ben.
Oh, that's neat.
Is that right? Abahonu Benin, that's where we read Evan. And the Rashbam says, well, it's not really, but the Nun there is the grammatical form of making a collective noun, like Khurban. The collective, the state of being Harev. Evan here, he's saying, is the state of being an Av. It is the fatherland idea. So Evan Yisrael, Mishpacha Yisrael. So Kilkel Yosef et Aviv et Achav, that Yosef supported his family. Evan Loshon Av u'mishpacha. That Evan here means the family. And Nun Yeteira, from Nun Shel Shigaon v'Ivaron, that all that, the word, like putting a ness on something in English. This is fatherness. Mem Shel Rekam, we see that a lot of, right, that extra Nun or Mem at the end of a word in Hebrew, is there to make it a concept or collective noun. Or Kinam, the wife, the Kinam. Yeah, that's the idea. So he said that Evan Yisrael, that Yosef is one who supports the Evan Yisrael, the family of Israel. Again, the people side of it. Not necessarily religious. And there's another aspect that we have this theme of Yosef and of Yisrael that's really not expressed by Yehuda, and that's this love of Eretz Yisrael. His loyalty to the land itself. And we see that by Benot Klavchad. They say that, you know, the Torah says, Benot Klavchad, the one who says, why Lomani Gara, why are we not allowed to get a portion in the land? And it specifically says that they are Mishpachat Menashe Ben Yosef. In turn, describing them and their whole history. Lama Nehmar, why do you need to add that last line? Halokavar Nehmar Ben Menashe. We already know they're the child of Klavchad, Ben Chefer, Ben Gilad, Ben Menashe. Why do I need to mention Yosef? Because Yosef kibbeh et ha'aretz. Yosef loved the land. Says Shenemar halitem atzmotai. He demanded, I want my children to go back. Listen to Rabbi Shulman from Rabbi Ben Nun, that actually there were pockets of Ephraim and Asher living in Eretz Yisrael throughout the time of the Shibud. That kind of had to be pulled back together because they settled in the land. They weren't sucked into Egyptian life. Right? Ubratav chavu et ha'aretz. And his daughters loved the land. Shenemar tenan lanu v'chazak. Give us a portion. If we're getting to it in B'nai Akiva terms, Yehuda was Torah Yisrael, and the kingdom of Yisrael was Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. The idea is all three of them together. So I'd say that when Yehuda, when they finally settle in Eretz Yisrael, they lose the loyalty of the other tribe. They're left alone. Because they really feel Atzmiu B'sari Atta only applies to themselves. They're really loyal to themselves, and they have no sense, even though the other ones before may have been B'nai Le'ah, they lose all the rest of B'nai Le'ah. Yosef is the one that is willing to bring them all in. He doesn't feel connected to any of the rest of the tribes. We see that throughout Sefer Shoftim. All those wars are either Yehuda or all those ones in the north. Right? Starts back in Sefer Bereishit, after the story of Yosef. Ibetahi, Bayerid Yehuda, Me'etachav. Right, Yehuda goes down, leaves the rest of his brothers early on, and that theme continues throughout Tanakh. It continues in our parak, right? That's David saying, Atzmi Basari, to his own people, to Yehuda. He doesn't say that to the rest of Israel. Even though David wants to bring them all together, you don't have that sense of, we are all one people. But in the end, when the nation splits, Binyamin goes with Yehuda, instead of staying with one of the most closely related to, which is Yosef. Why? How did they end up with Yehuda? And I would say, because they really should be the glue that holds everything together. Because they're B'nai Leah, but they're the seed of the Beit HaMikdash. So they have both of this connection to Leah and also this connection to the religious side of it. Right? That's Moshe's bracha to Binyamin. Binyamin Amar, Yedid Hashem. You are the beloved of God. Yishkol Nevetach Halav. Hashem will dwell there. Ofev Halav Kol Hayom. Hashem hovers over you always. Hashem will dwell there. Binyamin is the seat of the Beit Mikdash. And that's what should pull the whole nation together.
Yerushalayim is in
Binyamin. Yes.
Oh, how could I not know that?
Well, we talked
I thought it was the border between Yehuda and...
Well, it was right on the border. But in terms of the actual line, went through there. So part of the Mizbeah was in Yehuda. In this, but in, right? Mm. But the building itself was all Binyamin. Mm. But that mountain was over there. That was intentional. And that's what... Anyhow, you know, so politically, that's why Yerushalayim was made the capital. Was because that could reunite Yehuda, David Yehuda and Shaul's Binyamin together, because it was right there between them, and it wasn't it wasn't owned by either tribe. So if you look at the story of the split, it's very interesting. Again, this is a Malachim Yud Aleph. This is much later from now, but the split's going to happen. It was at that point when Rehavam, son of Shlomo, rejects the plea of the people and says, "No, you're going to suffer under me." Yeravam, who's leader of the rebellion, Yatzam Yerushalayim, and he leaves Yerushalayim. He presented his demands, Rechav refuses to listen. And a Navi named Achiyashili finds Yeravam. Achiyashili is a Navi, Baderach, he finds him on the way, Vuhu mitchaseh b'simlach hadashai. And Achiyah is wearing a brand new cloak. Rishneihem levadam basadeh, and they're alone in the fields. No one can hear them. But suppose Achiyah b'simla chadasha. So Achiyah takes his new cloak, asher ala, that he's wearing, but he kara'ah b'shneim asar kara'im. It tears into 12 pieces. His wife's going to kill him. He just bought this thing. Okay.
That sounds familiar.
What, tearing the cloak
tearing
thing?
Tearing the garment.
Yes. Yes. So this is obviously, he's a Navi.
That happened with Shmuel and Shaul.
That's right. And then David cuts the Shaul's cloak as well, echoing the same thing. But here he's not cutting one, he's not tearing it in half, he's cutting it into 12 pieces.
Yeah.
Tearing up his cloak. So he tells Yerubim, Kach lecha asara karayim, you take 10 pieces. Yichor Marshem, thus saith the Lord, Elkei Yisrael, Ni karata mamacham yad Shlomo. I have taken the kingdom away from Shlomo, v'natati lecha at asarat hashvatim, you get 10 tribes. And one tribe will remain with him, with Shlomo's son. L'man Avdi David, for the sake of David, L'man Yerushalayim, for the sake of Yerushalayim, Ha'ir Asher Bachati Bai, chose Yerushalayim, because Shiftei Yisrael. And the problem here is?
That's 11,
right. How do you understand? There's 10 tribes with Rechavam, 10 tribes with Yeravam, one tribe with Rechavam. The way I would understand that is that last part of you, Laman Yerushalayim Ha'ir Asher Bachati Ba, is that last tribe. There's one missing tribe in here. That's Binyamin. That is going to remain neutral. Okay, that's going to be the international tribe. Just like Yerushalayim needs to be international, that needs to be shared between the two countries, because both of them are Jewish, both of them need to have the Beit HaMikdash, they need to be there. It belongs to neither kingdom and share between them. That's why I would read that one out of those 12. 10 tribes for Yerubim. One is the kingdom of Rechavam in the south, and Binyamin as the neutral territory shared between them. Yeah, making Yerushalayim an international city, if that ever worked. Okay, Rav Ben Nun puts it, and so David is mentioning what Rabbi Shulman says. You want to say it, David? Has a different approach to this 11. Probably.
No, if you're going to say what Rabbi Shulman taught us, it's great.
Okay, so I'm disagreeing with Rabbi Shulman. I can do that because you should be learning from his shir as well. So he says that the achat, Shevet ha'achat is spread over two things, that kingdom of David, right? Yehuda gets two tribes. Shevet ha'achat yeh lo l'man avi David. That one tribe, because of David, added Shevet Echad L'man Yerushalayim, that also stays with David. He's saying that Shevet Echad, it should be read twice. One meaning Yehuda, one meaning Binyamin. So, I'm not going to read it that way, but you can discuss how you want to understand. You have to understand it somehow, because I assume the author of this text knew that 10 plus 1 did not add up to 12. There's got to be some meaning there.
So how do you read the text to get 12?
Right? Hashem Bracha Yelo Lemana Vidavid, period.
That's 11.
Ulaman Yushlaim Eir Shebarti Da Mikol Shivtei Yisrael is that last piece. That's its own phrase. That's not part of either kingdom.
And that's Binyamin?
Right. As the ideal. That's what's supposed to happen. That Yeravim is not supposed to. But Yeravim doesn't do that. Yeravim rejects this. Yeravim sets a border because he says, I don't want anyone going to Beit Midash. He builds a couple of golden calves and bin in Beit El and in Dan. Closes the border with Binyamin.
Wait, so how is that different than Rabbi Shulman? He also reads that one sentence to be describing two Shvatim.
He reads the Nevuah as giving Binyamin to be part of the kingdom of Yehuda. I am reading it as the Nevuah was to have him separate. And the historical reality was that Yerubim rejects it and rejects Binyamin, rejects the Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, Binyamin ends up with Yehuda by default. That the Nevuah as it stood, what Yahya Shulani told Yerubim is that you should not, right, you need to be both Yosef and Binyamin together. And Yehuda needs to be Yehuda and Binyamin together. That's the only way we can all survive. Yes, the kingdom is going to split, but we'll have something in common. And Yerubim is one who rejects that. Yerubim rejects the Beit Midrash, rejects Binyamin, and Binyamin ends up being part of Yehuda itself. So that's the sort of theme of Yehuda and Yosef, Yehuda and Yisrael, as the themes there. And then we have 10 minutes left. So I'm going to cite the Mispeh B'Yushalayim. You heard of this? This is Rav Kook's Hesped, his eulogy for Theodor Herzl. It's fascinating. You've got to read it. Look at you can click on the English translation here. There's a link over here. It's just fascinating. You can read the way Bezalel and Naor translated all Rav Kook's works into English for a lot of them. So this is the introduction to this Hesped B'Yushalayim. 20th of Tammuz, 1904. Dr. Theodor Herzl died. Avram Yitzchak Kook, the newly installed rabbi of the port city of Yafa, before he became the chief rabbi of Palestine, asked to participate in memorial service to honor the departed leader. Rav Kook was placed in a difficult situation, which there was no totally satisfactory solution. Because however one might lionize Herzl, found his Zionist movement, there's no getting away from the fact his lifestyle was that of an assimilated Jew, far from the observance of traditional Judaism. Born to adhere literally to the passage in Shulchan Aruch, the customary hesped eulogy for the deceased would be out of the question. You can't say a hesped for someone who is basically Oved Avodah Zarah, kept no mitzvot. On the other hand, Rav Kook knew his flock, and Herzl was regarded as nothing less than a modern-day prophet. He had to say something about Herzl. So the last thing Rav Kook wanted was renewed bickering, or was worse, full-blown controversy. So what does he do? Rav Kook's solution was to speak and never mention Herzl at all. It was an absolutely brilliant eulogy. It was clearly a eulogy about Herzl, about what Herzl meant. But no time he paid specific tribute to deceased Dr. Herzl. Instead, he would speak generalities. It turned out Rav Kook's non-eulogy for Herzl is without doubt one of the most inspired and profound hespedim ever. He talked about how important Herzl was without actually mentioning his name. Because he starts from this idea, you know, the Midrashim about the Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David. And there's a pasuk in Zechariah that talks about a hesped in Yerushalayim that would be as great as the hesped for Ben Hadar Rimon. Gemara says that the hesped, the mourning for Mashiach ben Yosef will be as great as the mourning for Achav. We talked about Achav. Oved Avodah Zarah, terrible king. Look at Sefer Malachim, he's the one who kills all the prophets. He was beloved by his people. Because he really represented his people. He was the ultimate of what we call Yosef. Ben Adam L'Chaveiro united the country, kept them together, but Oved Avodah Zarah. And Herzl never, rather, Kook never says that that's what Herzl was, but this is just his parts of this hesped usually. God created man, a body and a soul, corresponding to them, forces, strength, and developed body, those forces that strengthen and cultivate the soul. Ultimate wholeness is achieved when the body is strong and well-developed, and the soul, vital and cultivated, needs all the faculties of the body in the service of intellect, which is God's will in the world. So on the collective level of Israel, God ordained these two faculties. The faculty corresponding to the physical entity, as far as to material improvement in the nation, and second facet devoted to the cultivation of spirituality. Both of them are there. Originally, these two faculties were assigned to the two tribes destined to rule Israel, Ephraim and Yehuda. That's this, again, the same model that we've been talking about. This is not my idea. Which is another way of saying Yosef and Yehuda. Yosef was the provider sent by God to save many from starvation, who sustained Yaakov and his sons materially when he came to Egypt looking for grain. And he was fluent in the 70 languages, which is this last point, symbolized the congruity between Israel and the nations of the world. Yosef is also the part that's the part of Israel that is part of the world as a whole, as opposed to being isolated. On the other hand, symbolized that which is distinctive about the Jewish people, right? Hayah Yehuda Mikdasho, when we say in Hallel, was his sanctified one. Again, this religious side of it. Unfortunately, sins brought about that Israel rejected the Davidic dynasty, the nation was divided in two. These two powers that should have been united developed each in its own way, oblivious to its companion. Through many sins, both these faculties were greatly damaged. This is all rough book. The kingdom of Ephraim turned its back on Israel's unique sanctity, and Judah, deprived of the material side that enlivens, was in need of a spiritual supplement to replace the missing material aspect. Unable to rise to the occasion, the spiritual power was also ruined. The fact that they split meant that it was inevitable that both kingdoms would be destroyed. Since it is impossible for a nation to attain its lofty destiny other than by actualizing the two components, universal symbolized by Yosef, distinctive symbolized by Yehuda, there arise in the nation proponents of each aspect. Those who would enhance the spirituality prepare the way for Mashiach ben David, whose focus is the final destiny. Who the focus of life is the spiritual attainment, says that the spirit should only develop properly if it is accompanied by all the material acquisitions of which a full-bodied nation is in need. Those who address the material general aspect of life prepare the way for Mashiach ben Yosef. Right, that's it. Herzl was Mashiach ben Yosef in this sense. Both of them are needed. The Zionist vision manifests in our generation by best being symbolized in the footsteps of Mashiach ben Yosef, Ikvita de Mashiach ben Yosef. That's why Rabbi Cook looked at secular Zionism famously. So that's this idea that we need to bring Yosef back into the nation, because without that, everything falls apart. And that's what David is trying to do here. We'll try. And that's the only way we can get to this. So the goal of Acharit HaYamim, be a Melech Kohanim Goy Kadosh, an example to the world.
And it goes back to the idea of Ein Torah.
Okay, say that one more time. I didn't hear what you said.
I said it goes back to the idea that Ein Torah Bli Lechem.
That's true. Right. That goes as part of that as well. And I will end now with the citing the Star Trek Enemy Within. Everyone remember this? Everyone watch Star Trek where they have a transporter accident? And Kirk is split into two people, the really good, and I wouldn't call them as the evil, but the self-centered one. And neither can get anything done, right? They need to somehow pull them back together. They are both running around the ship and everything's falling apart. They need to pull them back together in order to get to the next episode. Okay, and that's what our Perek is desperately trying to get undo the transporter accident, getting them back together again. And I will stop here.